Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life. Hi everyone, Pei here with the Faith and Life team of St. Andrew's Cathedral. Our regular host, Jenny, is on a bit of a break today, so I will be helping her out with hosting some very interesting guests, to say the least. I have here with me Ms. Vivian Chen, who is the Director of Administration and Operations at the Cathedral, and all the way from Western Australia, Mr. Andrew Reynolds, who, can we say you're the Australasian representative of the Taylor & Company Foundry of the UK?
John Taylor & Company.
John Taylor & Company, yes. Sorry. Well, welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And our topic today is something that spans, over a century, has great meaning for us in the cathedral, and whose collective weight is about the same as an elephant, would you say?
A bit more.
A bit more. And okay. Well, without further delay, let's get Vivian. Would you kick us off and just share what's going on at the cathedral with this heavy weight?
How did it all start?
Yes.
We've been looking at the restoration of our monument. So we were doing deep restoration and going through all the things that we needed to do. And we left out the belfry and we left out the bell tower. Then I recalled that someone talked about giving us a bell. And then I said, okay, let's go check out this person. Because the last thing I want is them coming in and making a mess of our plans. And so we checked out with them and they told us the most amazing story. That they've been coming here for 30 years or more because they were trying to interest us on our bells. And bells was not even on our radar. I mean, we knew they rang, but that was all.
And they've been significant.
And they've been sitting there for 130 years. So it was quite a bit of excitement it generated. And when I spoke to people about the bells, they all seem excited, for reasons I couldn't fathom at the time.
Okay.
So that's how we got into this.
Yeah, yes. And maybe Andrew, you could tell us, why should people be excited about bells? I think you're the right one to speak on this.
Why should people be excited about bells? From my point of view, bells have a very long history in the Christian church. As you mentioned, bells were mentioned in the New Testament, and the worship of our Lord has always been associated with, even back into the Old Testament, with clashing cymbals and the sound of gongs and so forth. You find references to it the whole way through. And in many ways, it's the way of announcing Christian worship, that the joy and the excitement that accompanies Christian worship is always announced by something that is joyous and exciting. And that to me is the function of bells in modern Christian worship. The announcement of there is something that is going to happen here. It's exciting. It is carrying the word of our Lord. Come and listen. And for those people that are just walking past who aren't Christian or have detached themselves from the church, it's a constant reminder that the Christian church is here. It's alive. It's vital. And it carries a message for you. And that to me is the reason why we should be excited about bells and why we should be doing all we can to continue and expand their ministry.
Right. And so with that persuasion, Vivian said, let's do it.
Yes. Well, not me, because it.
Oh, right. It. The team said, let's do it. In the lead up to this episode, I didn't realize there were different ways of ringing bells, quote unquote, ringing. Yep. Can you share a bit more about the ways that bells make their sound and the differences? And
sure. There's two basic ideas. One is having the bell stationary and hit by a hammer or a clapper, or we say clapper, everyone else says hammer, hit by a clapper either from the inside or the outside. And this is the way that your bells were rung until they were pulled out a few months ago. This has one big advantage in that you can accurately determine when the bell is going to strike. You pull on the rope or you pull down on the lever or you hit the key on the keyboard, whichever one it is, the bell strikes and that's the end of the story. The problem there is that you can't get the full rich sound out of a bell that way. You're not going to get that great warmth and luxury of tone from a magnificent large bell, which you had here and will have again soon. If the bells hung stationary and just hit.
Right.
The reason is that you can't hit the bell hard enough
to get that
full richness of tone, because bells are actually quite brittle. So if you they're very easy to break if you hit them incorrectly or you hit them too long incorrectly.
Right.
And if they do break, you get this last beautiful sound.
And that's it.
And that's it, the bell's
broken. Dying breath of a bell.
The dying breath of a bell is, I hope never to hear it.
Yes.
But I do hear it occasionally at the bell foundry when we break up an old bell.
Right.
So that we can recast it. And you see an example of that with, for example, the Liberty Bell in the US, where the bell's heavily cracked. And what's happened there is that it's been held stationary and someone's hit it too hard.
You mean as in one strike
Either one or multiple strikes.
Okay.
It can be one strike if it's a really bad one.
Oh, dear.
Or it can just be multiple strikes over time.
Yeah, it's a bit like Kung Fu. You find the right spot and then
that's it. And you can easily break a bell with a sledgehammer by smashing it in a particular location. I'm not going to make a big noise about that because I don't want people to go around testing
it. Not at the cathedral anyway.
Yeah, please not at the cathedral.
Vivian will have a big headache.
Yeah, that's right.
Vivian would get very upset, and rightly so. The other solution is to have the bells in motion. So the bell itself is swinging, and the clapper within the bell is also swinging. So that when the clapper strikes the bell, not only does the clapper throw itself away from the bell, but the bell itself moves a little way away from the clapper at the same time. So you can hit the bell really hard and get that full rich sound out of it without risking damaging the bell, because the bell itself is also swinging away from the clapper. The real problem is when the clapper hits and it's held against the side of the bell. So when you pull a rope held against the side of the bell, eventually your bell is going to shatter.
Mm.
So the problem there, obviously, is you then end up with a solution with the bell sort of swinging through about 30-degree arc or so, hitting the clapper. You can't predict when it's going to strike.
Right.
So you end up with what is a lovely cacophony of sound,
mm-hmm.
but there's no control. There's no no way of ringing a tune or having any sense of anything other than the bells are ringing. And you'll hear this in things like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Is most French bells are rung that way.
I see.
So they just
new fact for the day.
and it's a beautiful sound,
right.
But you've got to have the bells well tuned. You've got to have them quite big so that they're not overlapping with each other in tone. And it's one solution. The British or the English were not happy with this idea of just having an uncontrolled cacophony of sound.
Right.
Apart from anything else, I think they also looked at it and thought, well, this is French, we're not having that.
So we'll choose an alternative method.
So what happened in the late 1400s and early 1500s was they realized that if you swung the bells fully mouth up, so they start vertically,
mm-hmm.
rather than starting at the bottom, you can then control it by having a big wheel on one side, a rope attached to that wheel, and then the bell would swing through 360 degrees one way and 360 degrees the other way. And you could actually control how rapidly it strikes, just with the limitation that it's got to swing all the way through each direction before it can strike again. So you can't ring conventional tunes. So the solution, effectively with bells, because of the way they are, you've always got a compromise of some description. Either you can ring tunes exactly with the bell's mouth down, but then you're missing out on the full, rich, glorious sound of a nice big bell. Or you can have it swinging, in which case you can't ring tunes anymore.
Right. So what gets people choosing one method over the other? Like, is it one is harder to train in, and that's why people go for the quick fix of
Yeah, well, training someone to ring when you have a large number of bells fixed in the downwards position, it then becomes a carillon or carillon, depending on whether you want to use the French or English pronunciation. And you end up with one person ringing it off a keyboard or off a pegboard or however you want to ring it. And that will give you, you can then get tunes, hymns and all the rest of it played off it. And that's one solution. But that then requires just a fairly lightweight tower, because the bells are all stationary and they're not moving at all. It's just a dead weight within the tower. It's structurally easy to deal with. Even when you've got bells up to about 10 tons, which is what you sometimes get with the big carillons. There's one in New Zealand, for example, where the bass bell is over 10 ton in weight.
10 tons. How did they get that up there?
It's a big crane.
Yes. Hooray for technology.
and that bell is the lowest one in the tower. But you don't need much structure around it to get that right. As soon as you start swinging the bells, you've got a big mass a long way up a tower that's swinging backwards and forwards. But you do get that much richer sound. Apart from anything else, as the bell is swinging through its arc, you hear the Doppler shift of the sound moving with the bell.
Right.
And to me, that's a much more pleasant sound than a carillon with its dead bells, as we change ringers like to call it.
Do you have samples for us of the differences in the sounds?
I'll play first of all a ring of bells that is very similar to what yours will sound like.
Ooh.
And then I can go with a quick example from a carillon.
Okay.
So the way we ring it is what we call change ringing, where you have the bells starting in the descending scale. So the lightest bell rings and then the heaviest bell rings all the way through to the heaviest bell. And you keep ringing that pattern until the conductor, who's the person in control of what's being rung, either says the name of the pattern to be rung or starts asking particular bells to just swap positions. Remembering the patterns is in the end what change ringing is. In many ways the it's around mathematics. We're ringing combinations and permutations. So for me, I've got very little musical sense at all. This is ideal because it's more about science. Mathematics, rhythm, science. We call it the art and science.
Yeah,
of change ringing.
That's...
So this particular example is a pattern called Aaron Sinks. Sinks means that for us it means it's being rung on 11 bells with the last bell being fixed in place. And the bells, these bells were cast by us about 20 years after your original bells were. So this is one of the very early sets of bells that were tuned to modern standards.
Okay.
This next one is an example of a ring of bells in continental Europe. So this is a Dutch carillon, and you'll hear it's a completely different sound from the bells. Much the same weight of bells in the tower, but you'll hear that the bells are all sounding the same each time they're struck, rather than that full swinging sound.
Great. Is there something unique about the St. Andrew's bells? There was some hearsay that in Southeast Asia or Asia, they sort of stand out.
Absolutely. These ones, particularly once they're hung, will be absolutely unique. They will be the only set of swinging, change-ringing bells in Southeast Asia.
Really?
And they're the only, they will be the only ring of 12 anywhere in Asia.
So they were originally 8, I think, right? I read
they were somewhere. Originally 8. They were sent
so
out
why
here.
12 now?
The 12 for several reasons.
One, Vivian, maybe you have something to say. From 8 to 12, what was the decision there to...
Well,
I'll be interested in Vivian's perspective.
Yes, let's hear both.
Well, the vicar thought, you know, there are 12 apostles, so let's try to get 12 bells. And so
will they be renamed?
You don't rename them because the names are cast on the bells already. So
okay,
our original
so
bells
polished off.
Yeah, so the largest one is called Andrew, right?
Because yes,
of
yes.
This cathedral, yeah. But and yeah, all right. Andrew.
That's
Reynolds
not why
also.
You went into this line of work.
No, it's
right?
not.
Yes. So because the fundraising was quite good, so the council was persuaded to approve that we could buy more bells.
Oh,
so
that's
we actually
lovely.
Bought an additional 4, so that would make 12. But Paul, yes. And the Apostle Paul was part of the set of 8. And we felt that, well, little Matthias got left out, you know, the last one. So we thought we'll get a 13th bell so that we could bring in Matthias as well.
So how
it's
little
kind of
is
silly reasons like that. But actually, it allowed us to play in 2 different scales.
Okay.
Not that the scales matter, but it would help us when we are first learning how to use to do change ringing.
Right.
We felt that the 3 largest ones would be a bit difficult for new ringers to master. So we need to come up with some, you know, build our experience.
So when
before
you say little,
attach,
how little is
little?
Little
is about
Matthias?
400 weight. What is that in
400 weight. No, it's about the new flat 6 is around 400 kilos.
Yeah.
Which is from, yeah. In terms of tower bells, a moderate weight. It's not.
400 kilos.
Yes.
Yeah.
The largest bell of the Andrew is getting close to a ton and a half in weight.
Right. So did we, Vivian, I mean, you're probably overseeing this whole project. Did we need to do a lot of extra reinforcement of the area?
Well, we got an engineer from the UK to study our tower and to make his recommendations. And he felt that the tower was actually built for bells. And actually, we found out a few things about our tower that we didn't know before.
Oh, could you
so
tell us?
That it was it had a ledge around it and things like that. So it was meant for bells to sit on this ledge. And so that's why we went on. And so we were trying to find out why the original people who gave us the bells did not do it that way. But I can well understand because this was given to us in the late 19th century.
Yes.
1889 when we got
that's
it.
That's amazing.
And many bells were also given to churches in India. And so this, what they call clapet bells, was kind of the thing they did. It was easy to manage, you know, somebody just strikes it. Whereas for change ringing, you needed expertise to hang the bells.
Right.
And you needed expertise to know how to maintain them. And of course, you needed the expertise of the bell ringers. So it's not as simple as it is. We're going from one level to a much higher level. For chiming bells, you just need one person. He just pulls the ropes. He can manage all that. But for change ringing, you need a team. So teamwork is very important. And you need a team that practices together.
So this team has already been trained or is in training?
We've just started. We've just started. We formed a small group to start this bell ringing ministry. So they're going to work out how we're going to organize ourselves, how we're going to recruit, how we're going to train and get teams in place. So
very nice.
That would be something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And,
and it's happening in 2019, which is significant. Can you share
a few thoughts on
why 2019?
We didn't choose 2019.
It chose you.
It just happened. It happened in 2018, was it? When did you visit us?
I first visited in 2017, I think.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it was December 2017, was that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we decided to get it together for 2019 because that's both the 130th anniversary of the bells being installed and it's also the 200th anniversary of Singapore itself.
So yeah, it's bicentennial. Like
yes.
It's There's public and government interest, apparently.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
So
I think the timing was not picked by us, right?
It was just God's moment
to
restore this.
Yes, everything came together remarkably quickly.
Did it? It just fell into place.
Yeah,
my father has been trying for about 40 years. And
40?
I thought it was 30.
Well, you know.
Maybe it's history.
He first visited here in 1973 and had a good look at the bells at that stage and a chat with the then dean, the then bishop, I think. But there was very little interest as at that stage. The cathedral had very many other needs. But my father is remarkably persistent. When I turned up in for that first meeting with Vivian, I had all of my father's work, and Vivian was, I think, quite surprised that I was able to hand her full diagrams, engineering opinions, plans.
So you were well prepared, and yes. She was easily persuaded.
Thanks very much to my father, Laith. It was a remarkably good moment.
Very good. So back to, I think you mentioned earlier that there is public interest.
Oh, there's a great deal of public interest.
Could you share a bit more about that?
When we first talked about the bell, certainly many members of this church was very excited about it. So there's a lot of ground support for it. And when we talk to the regulatory authorities, because we need to get their permission to bring these bells back to reinstall them, they were excited too. And so we're very happy that there is a lot of interest and good interest in the bells, and that we're doing this.
Yeah, it's exciting. I think it sort of harkens back to the church being the voice in the city, the role of calling people to the Lord, of protection, like you mentioned. So I think everyone's going to look forward to this momentous occasion in August.
If I can just add, there's also a large amount of interest amongst the bell ringers globally.
Are they coming in for the...
Absolutely. A new 12 anywhere, they'll be happy to help train, teach, or whatever else is necessary here.
Great. A new 12. So it's rare that a set of 12 is restored or...
Yes. A 12 is a cathedral-sized ring. And
we are the cathedrals.
Yes. It is. A 12 is what is traditional in a large cathedral. It's the correct way for a cathedral to call the faithful to prayer.
Okay. Well, I think we have reached our time today. And thank you so much, Vivian, for joining us and sharing your thoughts from the operational perspective, and to Andrew for, I think, just telling stories of bells that we never knew. And I think it's exciting. It's exciting to just think that these bells will be restored. So thank you both for coming in today.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.